let's start with looking at those mitzvahs that are called mitzvahs lo ta'aseh, the negative commandments in the Torah, those things that the Torah tells us not to do. Our usual assumption is that the positive commandments in the Torah, the mitzvahs aseh, are things that build us, advance us in Kedusha. We'll try to get to a definition of Kedusha in a little bit. And mitzvahs lo ta'aseh damage us. Not just us ourselves, damage the world in spiritual and sometimes even bubbling down to the physical world, because spiritual and physical are parallel. When we look at the parable that Chazal used, this kind of falls apart. I'll try to get to it with a story, one that I've told many, many times. One of the first times I was giving a shiur in a college setting back in America. So I tried to pick something that wouldn't be too controversial. I picked Pirkei Avos. That has nice, pithy sayings that people can generally agree about. Somehow, I ended up with the Mishnah that says that Ein lecha ben chorin ela mi she'osek b'Torah. There's no one as free as one who was involved in Torah. This got many talkbacks from the crowd. Right? They said that, you know, you can say whatever you like. You want to say a person who lives a life of Torah is holier, is elevated, whatever you want. Don't say free. They said, if to many of them, I was the only Orthodox Jew they had met. They said, we have never met a more restricted person in our life. You should be like wearing a t-shirt that says, I'm sorry, I can't do that, because that's basically your reaction to any situation on the planet. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped me there with something that flashed back to me from high school biology, the amoeba. Right? People remember the amoeba, single-celled creature made out of, it's called ectoplasm, some kind of plasm, what we would call goo or jelly, and it doesn't have rigid cell walls. It has a flexible cell wall, and that enables the amoeba to constantly be changing its shape. That's how the amoeba moves, by extending pseudopods of itself and then kind of catching up. That's the way the amoeba eats. When it sees a particle of amoeba food, it extends parts of itself and engulfs it. Kind of what happens at food at a kiddush after Shabbos davening, right? And this is the life of an amoeba. Now, an amoeba is extremely flexible and free. An amoeba has no set shape. An amoeba can be an ovoid, can be a circle. It can ooze around and through and under objects. Looking at me, I am a relative prisoner. I'm much more limited. To change my shape, I have to do a lot of exercise and knock off the starchy stuff. And even then, I can only change millimeters. But let's look at it in another way. What can I do that an amoeba can't? I'm able to build, to dance, to travel. All these different things I'm able to do because that which holds me, so to speak, prisoner, a very rigid skeleton, and the system of tendons and ligaments that hold all those things together, those enable me to do. Those enable me to do far more than an amoeba. Without those things, I would be a bag of squishy stuff. I wouldn't be able to do anything. So here, Chazal is showing us that the mitzvahs lo taseh, which they divide up the mitzvahs into, Ramach, 248 mitzvahs aseh, that correspond to the limbs of our body, and the shasa, the 365 mitzvahs lo taseh, negative mitzvahs, they say correspond to the gidim, to the ligaments and tendons in our body. If we think about what a ligament does, what a tendon does, so it doesn't imprison us, it lends strength and functionality. Sometimes you're listening to the news and in the sports report they'll say so-and-so tore a ligament in the last game. So you might think, cool, he's got more freedom of movement. No, he's sidelined, right? He can't do it. Right? An extreme example, if you have a friend who's a surgeon, you'd say, you know, I always wanted to be able to turn my arm 360 degrees. Could you just like cut those ligaments so it can like go round and round like that? He could, but it would just hang there uselessly unless someone's spinning it for you. Okay, that would be free, but limited. Free, but useless. Okay, so this lets us take a look at getting a much more positive sense of those things that Torah tells us not to do. When the Torah tells us not to do something, the very existence of that commandment, of that lifestyle of not doing that, is not just maintaining us so that we don't damage. It's strengthening us. It's enabling us to do in ways that we often would not be able to imagine. So this shows us that each negative commandment really has in its roots a positive. The Sfas Emes, if you want to get a little bit mystical, asked, right, there are sparks of Kedusha that give everything existence. That's at the root of anything to have existence. Without the spark of Kedusha in anything, it wouldn't exist. Those sparks of Kedusha are really aspects of the Torah. So he says, here we take a member of the porcine species, a pig, right? A chazer, Jews often would call it dover acher, that other thing. He says, we can't eat it. What gives it its spiritual life in the world? The Sfas Emes says, easy, the mitzvah not to eat it. Right? If you were able to look through Torah eyeglasses at a pig, you would see deep inside its spiritual core is that mitzvah that says, don't eat me. So the negatives really come from a positive and a positive root. This helps us redefine and relook at our concept of Kedusha and our concept of the things that we don't do. Rabbi Wein told a story to illustrate this. Rabbi Beryl Wein is famous for his Jewish history lectures, but early in his rabbinic career he worked for the OU in the Kashrus division. And one of the assignments he had was to supervise a run of kosher wine in a regular non-kosher vineyard or winery. Okay, because nowadays there are standalone kosher wineries. But back in those days, when Jews decided they wanted to get fancy and not drink the purple pancake syrup anymore, but they wanted their Cabernet Sauvignon and these kind of things, so they would go to the Napa Valley, they would go to a vineyard, and they would do a kosher run. So part of what he had to negotiate was how he would work with the wine taster. Okay, because the wine taster has to sample the wine at different times and look at it and smell it and sip it. So he had to work out, you know, choreograph how they would work together so that the wine would remain kosher and yet he would be able to do the testing he had to do. While he was working with him, he got to know him. He was curious. He asked him, he said, did you like major in wine testing in university? The man was from France. He said, but no, he says. I come from the little village in France. He says, where wine is very important. And when I was very young, I had a very good sense of taste. My parents noticed I could eat something my mother made. I knew exactly what was in there. I could even walk into the house and smell and know what was cooking. So they took me to be tested by the wine tasters in the region. And they gave me different things. And they said he could be a wine taster. He could be a wine taster. Okay, now, before we get to the program he would have to undergo, let's not minimize what this is. We had a fellow here in Yeshiva whose family business was wine, and he said that these guys, you know, blind taste test, you give them something, they swish it around in their mouth, say Portugal, right, probably about 5-6 years old, not that much rain that year, probably on the southern slopes by the ocean, right, slightly acidic soil, these kind of things. You look at the label, and there it is, right? They can do these things. Is that an important thing to do? I'll leave that to you to judge. But, right, it is definitely a talent. It's something you can do. So they told him, in order for you to be a wine taster, you must accept upon yourself now not to eat anything very hot, no scalding soup or tea or anything, not to eat anything very cold, no ice creams, not to eat anything very spicy, right? No five-alarm chili. And he says, and so it is. All my life I've been eating bland, lukewarm food because I'm a wine taster. So Rabbi Wein noticed he didn't say this with a tear in his eye. He said it with tremendous pride. And he realized there that this perhaps would give a handle on this concept of Kedusha. Kedusha involves separation. We'll see that more in a second. But it also involves dedication. And it involves separation, not for self-torture, but separation for a purpose. Here, he valued his existence as a wine taster so much that the negative actions of staying away from those forms of eating took on the positivity of his dream and living his life and expressing his talent. So that's definitely one form of it, but I think it goes even further. I think that that mushel hits its limits at a certain point. Because what it's telling us there is that you have certain positives and positive abilities. Stay away from things that could damage it. Stay away from things that could damage it. That's definitely very logical and something a person always has to see and sense. And we oftentimes do undercut ourselves, shoot ourselves in the foot. One example that comes to mind was I go occasionally to the gym. to try and keep the ticking and such. And I was on one of these treadmills, and the fellow next to me decided he would converse with me. He was a fellow who was having a hard time on the treadmill. He was sweating a lot, panting a lot. And he said, you know, I come here a lot, he says, but I still don't make that much progress. I said, you know what my problem is? He said, berekas. Berekas. I love berekas. He says, the ones with the cheese, the ones that they make that are like pizza, potato ones. You know those ones with the potatoes and the mushrooms? Those are so good. I eat them every day. So here he was, like, panting away on the thing, talking about, you know, that either before or after, at least it wasn't during, right, he's going to be hitting the berekas, and it's going to kind of be undercutting his fitness regime. Now, again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be on the treadmill. He's probably much better off eating the berekas and running as opposed to, you know, just eating the berekas in the armchair. But we do undercut. We can undercut ourselves in different ways. I went to a conference on Torah education and media technology. This was many years ago. So we're dealing with different technology. But there was a speaker. He was a Rebbe in a yeshiva high school here in Israel, taught Gemara for many years. And he said, you know, we have parent-teacher meetings at different points in the year. Almost every year, I have the same conversation. At some point, I'll be sitting down. Usually, it's the mother of one of my students. Will say something like, Rabbi, I don't mean to be offensive. Have you considered going back for training in some teaching techniques? He says, why do you ask? She says, well, my son Shlomi, I'm sure you know, is a very, very intelligent boy. And to be honest, he finds your classes boring. So he says, he will ask her, and this was again what we're dealing with this time, he says, does Shlomi have a television in his own room? She'll say, yes, he loves sports. Bless him. You know, he likes to keep up with his soccer and with things like that. He doesn't watch anything bad. You know, he says, madam, I'm an overweight, bald Gemara Rebbe. I cannot compete with what he's watching at night in his room. Okay, so there is that idea, similar to the idea of the wine taster and the berekas on the treadmill, that there are things which cause interference that simply undercut your ability to experience something, to enjoy things. But there's more to it than that. When the Torah tells us, Kedoshim Tiyu, it says, be holy. How do you define that? Mefarshim try to take a look at that and approach it, to look for some kind of definition. Rashi says, right, he says, separate yourselves from arayos, from forbidden relations, right, and all that can bring to that, and from sin. And then he goes on again to emphasize the arayos. When you find a fence, a geder means a fence to protect from forbidden relations, you find kedusha. Now, if you're careful with that Rashi, and the Svasemes, the Sarn of Karlin, point this out, he's not saying that the fence of against Erva will enable Kedusha to flourish in that place, or will prevent damage to Kedusha. The fence alone brings the presence of Kedusha. Having the fence brings Kedusha. Again, something you're doing that's a negative is not just there to enable the positive to happen, or to prevent interference with the positive, but setting up that fence creates a positive result, kedusha. When we set up a shul, we make a mechitza. We have a separation between men and women. So sometimes people will say, oh, that's disgusting, you know, what is it, men can't keep their eyes in their sitter during davening, right? Why should you have to set up such a thing, right? That's not the issue. The idea is that setting up a place with a geder, with the fence, makes it a place of kedusha. Right? It makes it a place of kedusha. Whatever happens there, it doesn't happen there. That itself makes and it brings. We tend to think that we're starting at a zero point, if we imagine a needle on the kedusha meter, and if I do a mitzvah, so the needle tilts and goes up to 100. If I do an Avera, the needle goes down to 100. if I set up something to prevent Avera from happening, the needle remains at zero. That's not true. When I set up something to prevent the Avera from happening, the needle goes to 100 on the positive as well. Just by setting up the Geder itself, just by setting up that difference. So one of our applications nowadays for sure is our interaction with technology. Right? Many people will say, you know, listen, I have no problems with my interaction with technology. I'm not interested in negative kind of things which are there. I don't want it to slow down my bandwidth and my speed or whatever it is. But by setting up a fence, and again, there are all sorts of different kinds of filtering and accountability systems which are there, you're creating Kedusha. You're not just preventing non-Kedusha. You're creating Kedusha. You're actually able to turn that phone into a thing of Kedusha. You're able to create the whole entire zone which has your technology into a zone that positively brings Kedusha as simply something which is just trying to fight against negativity from happening or coming in. And this is really how we look at this sense of Kedusha, which has in it negative actions with positive results. Let's take a look at a positive application of Kedusha. Hopefully everyone at the right time, if you haven't done it yet, will stand and look deeply into the eyes of the photographer and say the line, Hare at Mekudeshes li b'tavazu kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. Right? This is an act which is called Kiddushin. Now the Gemara in Kiddushin says, why do we use that lashon? Why do we use that language for halachic engagement, so to speak? It says, because the osur lo akuli alma hekdesh. We have what's called hekdesh. Hekdesh is something which has been dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. Now that dedication takes place by that item becoming forbidden to everyone else but the Beis HaMikdash. It happens simultaneously. Forbidden to everyone, and now able to perform, so to speak, in the realm of Kedusha that's the Beis HaMikdash. When a person gets halachically engaged, what we call Kiddushin or Erusin, what happens? They're not allowed to live together as man and wife yet. We say that in the Birkas HaErusin at a chuppah. We say the bracha, Asher Asar Lanu Es HaRusos Lanu. Those women who are halachically engaged to us are forbidden to us. Only those that we complete the entire marriage process with of chuppah and kiddushin can we then live with as man and wife. So what does happen at that moment of kiddushin, right? And there's usually tremendous excitement at a wedding, you know, when that ring goes on and people make all sorts of noises and came this new style to yell, Mekudeshes, Mekudeshes. And somebody's there saying, what does that mean? That means she's forbidden to every man on the planet. Right? Aside from that one. Is it positive or negative? Right? It couldn't be that linkage which she has with her husband could not exist without that separation from everybody else by its very definition. So when we're told Kedoshim Tiyu, Rashi's telling us that this positive result, part and parcel, must come about through things that you're not doing, not just through things that you are doing. The negatives really are positive and have that positive. If we now look at another definition of this, it was back in Parshas Kedoshim, we come to the Ramban. The Ramban extended the definition beyond that of Rashi, and he says, really, this commandment in the Torah, Kedoshim Tiyu, to be Kadosh, closes a loophole that could exist in Halacha. Right? If we're working on a straight Doraisa level, before Rabbeinu Gershon kind of took polygamy off the table, you could come over to a man's house, and he can be sitting there in his lounge chair drinking champagne, surrounded by 25, 30 wives, and you know, grilling themselves some steaks on the grill, and you say, I'm sorry, I thought you were an observant Jew. He says, I am. What's this party going on? Excuse me, going to the living room, there are 30 ksuvas up on the wall, right? Every one of these women I married, right? Chuppah v'kiddushin, 30 albums there if you want to see, and all these things. He says, the meat is glatt kosher, the wine, supervised by Rabbi Wine maybe, right? It's all good, let the good times roll. So this is something, he says, is called novel birshus haTorah. to live a disgusting life, so to speak, within the parameters of Torah. So the Ramban says, what Kedoshim to you is telling you, Kadesh Atzmecha B'mutar Loch. He says, there are things which are allowed to you, but sometimes you have to separate from those things that are allowed to you. Why? To torture myself? It's allowed. The Torah gave us so much stuff that's not allowed. Now you're telling me that there's stuff that I'm allowed to do that I'm not supposed to do? Why? To enable yourself to connect to things. To enable yourself to be functional. To enable yourself to do more. Not for the sense of deprivation alone. Not for the sense of the negativity. But for what that will enable you to do. The separation is for that dedication. And the emphasis has to be, so then what? So should I do nothing? Why not do nothing? Right? Is that what you're telling me? No. Listen to a fascinating parish from the Vilna Gaon. Came from a fascinating source. There was a Rav named Rav Aaron Volkin. He was a great teacher of Torah back in Lithuania. He wrote Sforim Beis Aaron on different masechtas and shas. His grandson spoke in the yeshiva a while back. He's the mashgiach of the yeshiva at Teres Yisrael here. And he said that once when he was a young man, he heard that in a certain village in Lithuania, there was still someone alive who had seen the Vilna Gaon. So back when men were men, if you heard something like that, you got yourself on a wagon or a train and you got to talk to this guy before he leaves this world. So he came to this old man. He says, they told me that you saw the Gaon. And said, yes. He says, did you learn anything from the Gaon? He says, yes. He said, could you share it with me? He says, yes. But let me qualify first for a bit. Yeah, it's not like I was a student of the Vilna Gaon. I was just a kid who lived in Vilna. We knew the Gaon existed, right? There were many, many, many shuls in Vilna. The Gaon had his own particular place he davened. But one time, the shul that I would go to with my father, once for Mincha in the middle of the week, in walked the Vilna Gaon. After Mincha, the custom in our shul was we would learn a little bit of Pirkei Avos. So we asked the Vilna Gaon if he would please teach the daily Pirkei Avos. We were involved in that Brisa in the sixth parak, which talks about the 48 kinyonim of Torah, the 48 acquisitions of Torah. And there, the Gaon asked the following question. A variety of the ways in which you acquire Torah are described as mi'ut, limiting. It says, mi'ut tzchok, limiting joking around, mi'ut sicha, limiting your chatting, mi'ut sheino, right, limiting your sleep. He says, a kinyan, an acquisition, is a halachic tool. Now, for a kinyan to happen, like that kinyan of Kiddushin, you're giving something, one person is giving to another person, right? You don't have to give a ring, you could give your wife a sheep, you could tell her a joke which is worth a pruta, the variety of creative chuppas you could have, right, if you still desire. But one thing you can't do is the following. If your wife walked around her seven times and the band stopped playing and they hand you the microphone, you could ask your wife, would it be worth a pruta for you, for me not to punch you in the nose? She would probably say yes. So you say, Hareat mekudeshesli, with the fact that I'm not punching you in the nose, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. Doesn't work. Why? Because you're trying to make a kinyan with something you're not doing. That can't be. The kinyan has to be with something you are doing. Now, says the Gaon, plug it back into the Mishnah. Miut sicha means true limitation of sicha, but you acquire Torah by talking a bit. Miut shena, you limit your shena, but the emphasis is you acquire Torah by sleeping sometime. Everybody knows that point where it's just not going in and you have to get your head down for a bit in order to acquire. Right? Each of these things. So there is an aspect of minimizing, but the emphasis is not on what I'm not doing. It's the idea of having dedicated and justifiable use of what I'm doing for a purpose. That's the picture and that's the sense that we're supposed to have. Now, don't get overboard on this. A person says, wow, if you put up a fence, that means we have Kedusha. And you go around and start building up fences and you start putting up, you know, cast iron mechitzas in your shul instead of the little curtain that they have and all these different things. You have to know the Chachamim were the ones who give us a geder, who give us something, a fence to protect. And for each person, things have to be oftentimes individual, even I would say by prescription. Rav Volba Zatzal said that when it comes to something that's above and beyond the basic halacha, a person must get a prescription for what's called the midas chasidus, doing something above and beyond the law, from a Talmud Chacham, a wise person who knows them. Because you can mess up. Here's an example. The example he uses is something called tainis dibur, fasting. Okay, fasting is something which the Torah mandates only on one day. The Nevi'im added in some other fasts which we keep. There are other fasts, right? In fact, some people are doing it during these weeks, the fast of Bahab, Sheni, Chamishi, Sheni, after the major holidays at a certain time period afterwards, 3 days of fasting and Slichos, right? Many of us do not do these optional fasts nowadays, right? Ravadia, I don't remember the exact phraseology, but he was basically saying that we don't have the strength of previous generations, and it could be because we eat a lot more. In the old days, the day you fast and the day you didn't fast oftentimes was not all that different. But now, what happens is we get tired, we get irritable, and we spend all day thinking about food. So there's really not that much net gain in a fast. But then sometimes people hear about a concept called tainis dibur. Instead of fasting from eating, you fast from speaking. The ground rules of a tainis dibur are you take a certain set period of time in which the only speaking you will do are divrei Torah and tefillah. So that looks fabulous, right? Suddenly your lashon hara goes down to zero. You'll probably speak more Torah because you want to say something, and that's all that's there. Why not do it every day? Says that person may not be thinking of the repercussions. First of all, Chazal tells us, right, that there's a lot of positive. A person oftentimes needs to speak things out. When you have worries, when you have troubles, you need to talk to people. Number two, you can do tremendous good with your speaking for other people. Shlomo HaMelech said, "Mavis v'chayim b'yad haloshon." It's true. Speaking in the wrong way can create death. Speaking in the right way brings life. Words of encouragement, words of advice, helping people, compliments, making people happy. You'll be cutting all those off. Said perhaps the most dangerous is that you become arrogant. You walk around all day looking at everyone, talking. Look at those people. Talk, talk, talk. Not like me. Tainis dibur. Which, arrogance is such a powerful thing. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I cannot be in the same place as one who is arrogant. Right? It's just interestingly, the Talmud Rebbe's grandfather, Rabbi Yochanan, used to say this over. I forget from whom, it was one of the vision tzerebis, said, why is it good to go to the Kotel? Says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you have a person who's arrogant, ein ani v'hu yecholim lodur b'makom echad. Me and him, we can't be here in the same place. Chazal said, la'olam lo zozo shechina mikosel ha'maravi. The divine presence never left the Kotel. So he says, so if I come to the Kotel and I have arrogance in me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not leaving, so somehow he's got to get that arrogance out of me. He says it's a good operation to do. So here, those are the dangers. So therefore, a geder offense has to be something, which either is something that Chazal mandated for us in our halachas, something which a person got personal advice from someone who knew him well, and then you're able to do that. But this is really the name of the game. We're trying to live a life of Kedusha. We're approaching Matan Torah. And there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that the bottom line of what we're supposed to be to receive the Torah is Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. A nation of Kohanim, and that aspect Kohanim means one who serves, who does, V'Goy Kadosh. A nation of Kedusha. The Piasetzin Rebbe pointed out, that's not describing the ultimate maximum state that a few individuals in the Jewish people are supposed to reach. That's basic definition of a Jew. Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. So therefore, each of us in our own way, and in our community, and in our yeshiva, have to think about how we can just not stay away from damage, but how we bring more Kedusha into ourselves, into this place, into the community, and then that helps everyone else. It's hard work sometimes, and it can feel negative, but if you think it through right, you can realize that that negative is really a positive.